www.ada-audio.org website. You will receive an email with the link to the archive as soon as it is available. The session has real-time captioning available, and the CC symbol is on the top of your screen in the toolbar, and if you click on the icon, it will open the dialog box where captioning can be viewed. You can resize this window and position it wherever you would like it on your screen. After the session, the handout will be emailed to you along with an evaluation survey, and we will also be putting a link to an evaluation on the public chat at the end of the session. So please take a couple of minutes to fill out the survey. We really do value your feedback to us. Okay, and without further ado, today's session, we're going to be talking about how to create accessible video. Video has become a common means of sharing information about everyday activities and events, but it still remains largely inaccessible to people with sensory impairments. There are lots of tools available to facilitate the creation, but it is not always widely known or understood. So we're very fortunate to have with us today Terrell Thompson, Technology Accessibility Specialist at the University of Washington. He is with DOIT, which is a part of the university, stands for Disabilities, Opportunities, Internet Working, and Technology at the University of Washington. Since 1992, DOIT has worked to increase the participation of individuals with disabilities in challenging academic programs and careers. Terrell's role in this effort is to promote information technology, that's IT, accessibility by developing resources, delivering lectures and workshops, providing consultation, and conducting research. Terrell has over 15 years of experience in the IT accessibility field and has presented internationally at numerous conferences and consulted widely with local and state government, private industry, and K-12 and post-secondary education entities on IT accessibility issues. And I personally have had the pleasure of working with him on a number of projects in the past, so I know that you are in for a treat. So welcome, Terrell, and please go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you, Judith, and thank you, everyone, for coming and participating in this event. I am broadcasting live from the AHEAD conference. Those of you that are familiar with that, it's the Association for Higher Education and Disability, and it's here in Seattle, home of the University of Washington, so I didn't have too far to travel to get to the conference, but I'm giving this presentation from my hotel room. So if I put the please do not disturb sign on the door, so hopefully they'll honor that. And hopefully I've actually confirmed with the front desk that internet would not stop at noon my time and ask me for a credit card. So if I suddenly disappear an hour into the presentation, that's probably what happened, and I'll quickly pay and get right back to you. But they assured me that would not happen, so I think we're good to go. So here at AHEAD, I actually am talking pretty extensively about accessible video. This is a very hot topic, and yesterday I gave a pre-conference session along with some colleagues from around the country. And we were going to break that pre-conference session into three different concurrent sessions throughout the week. So we're going to be delivering the same information to a broader audience. But I don't know how many hours we were talking about this yesterday, maybe 6 to 8, somewhere in there, all told, talking about accessible video. And so this is a compressed version of that same content. I certainly won't be able to go into as much detail, but I hope to cover a wide variety of topics related to accessibility video and to get into enough detail for those of you that already have some knowledge of workflows and technologies for you all to get stuff out of this too. So I'm really expecting that you're sort of all over the map in terms of how much experience you have with accessible video, but I want to make sure that I meet all of your needs. So,
conference muted.
The presentation.
New entry tone off.
Let's see. I'm going to need to turn off the screen reader in my Illuminate because it's a bit distracting. Or maybe I can mute the audio. Okay, hopefully we'll be good. So I want to break the conversation down into a few discrete chunks today. So we're going to be talking about various aspects of accessible video. And after each, I'll sort of pause and take a few questions at that point. Mostly, I think we're going to save questions for the end. But I want, while we're on a particular topic, if people do have burning questions related to that topic, then I want to give you a chance to ask before you lose that train of thought. So hopefully we'll have enough cushion to do that. So just a little bit more about the projects that I work on. Judith actually gave you a really good introduction to Do-It. The only thing I'll add to that is that since we've been around since 1992, we've had an opportunity to create a lot of videos related to technology accessibility and just opening up doors for students with disabilities as they pursue challenging careers. And I think all told, we have about 50 videos that we have produced. And so we've done quite a bit in the way of video production and making sure that our videos are as accessible as they possibly can be. So we really have explored and pushed sort of the cutting edge of video accessibility and continue to do that. So I'll talk a little bit about our efforts throughout the presentation. And then the grant that I primarily am funded with currently, other than being about half funded by the University of Washington to provide technology accessibility services internally, the other half is on federal grants, and one of those that I'm predominantly funded by is Access Computing, which is working to increase the participation of people with disabilities in computing fields. And so we are specifically focusing on sort of broadening participation in computing and opening up doors for students with disabilities to pursue computer science fields and computer engineering and those sorts of things. And so as video is used more and more in curriculum, then making sure that that's accessible becomes really a key. So that's my role within that project is continuing to work and promote technology accessibility, including video accessibility. So when we're talking about making video accessible, we have to first define what exactly that means. Who are we trying to make video accessible to? And the simplest way to answer that is everyone. We want everybody to access the video content that we produce. And so who is everyone? Who might potentially have difficulty accessing the video that we produce? So the current slide has a list of who some of those people might be. People who can't hear the audio content, that's typically the first response that we get when we ask this question. Folks understand that closed captions might be required for somebody who's deaf or hard of hearing. I phrased it like I did, people who can't hear audio content, because there are other folks who are in a similar sort of situation, situationally hearing impaired, you might say, where they are in a place where all they have is speakers, not a headset, and it's maybe a quiet computer lab, or they don't want people listening to whatever it is that they're watching. Or maybe they don't have access to audio output at all. Maybe there are no speakers, no headset. These sorts of situations, a person can't hear the audio content. So they're in the same situation as somebody who's deaf or hard of hearing, and therefore they benefit from whatever accessibility solutions we provide to make sure that that video is accessible to them. Similarly, people who can't see visual content could be somebody who is blind or has a visual impairment. Could also be just somebody who is doing something else, wanting to watch the video, but they're multitasking, and they could also benefit from whatever solutions would benefit somebody who's blind or visually impaired. People who can't see or hear, that then would be somebody who's deaf or blind, but there are other people who fall into that category too. If somebody is, for example, on a slow bandwidth connection, then maybe they can't get video to work. Or maybe there's something wrong with their technology. A lot of times video can be a little bit complex, and sometimes it doesn't work. those folks would still like to access content, right then and there, rather than having to troubleshoot for a while to get that content, or having to travel into where they have higher speed internet access. So, they too need some sort of alternative. And we're going to talk about what all these solutions are throughout the presentation. I've also tossed in people who you might not necessarily think of, certainly not necessarily people who have disabilities, but people who have certain needs to find specific content within a video. They need to search the video. This is really common for us in higher education, as we're getting a lot more lecture capture happening. And as students are going back and trying to review some of that material, they remember something was said in some lecture, but they can't remember which one it was. And within that lecture, they certainly don't want to watch the entire hour or 90-minute video trying to find that content. And so if it is all transcribed and captioned, then it becomes searchable. And so that then is a great benefit to everyone that comes out of an accessibility solution. Same thing with people who don't understand the language that's spoken in the video. If you have captions or transcript, then you can translate those. And particularly with captions, those can be translated on the fly. YouTube is already doing that if folks haven't experienced that. Some very, very cool and promising functionality within the YouTube player that translates a captioned video into other languages on the fly. You just choose whichever language you want, and you've got a translation right there. So that really opens up the door to a much broader audience. And in higher education, we've actually gotten those last two items, searchability and translatability, have gotten the attention of people in high places. Whereas previously, if we just wanted a caption for the deaf or hard of hearing, then people agreed generally that that was the right thing to do, but they never would really get excited about it and put a lot of money behind it. But now all of a sudden, accessibility is filling all these other needs, and people are starting to pay attention. So this is what we're going to be talking about, is sort of using these bullet points as a guideline and a framework. We want to figure out how to make sure the video is accessible to each of these groups of people. So let's start with the first accessibility solution. That would be captions. And that solves, you've already knocked off half the bullets on the previous slide. By captioning our video, it becomes accessible to people who can't hear it, becomes searchable, it becomes translatable. Captions are when spoken audio appears as text. As I just mentioned, it can be searched, it can be automatically translated, and so forth. And I've got an image here on the slide of a YouTube video. And just to demonstrate that it actually does do this, and for those of you that haven't explored the YouTube video lately or aren't aware of this feature, if a video has a CC button, then of course it stands for closed captions. You can hover over that, and that then displays a caption submenu. Gives you a couple of different options. One, actually, if the video is not captioned, some videos provide a CC button anyway and allow you to do an automatic transcript or automatic captioning of that video. That technology is not quite there yet. The captions that it produces are not really suitable for use, and that a person who's deaf or hard of hearing and really needed that access could not really count on those captions being accurate. And a lot of times they're hilariously inaccurate. But that technology is getting better all the time, and Google has made some pretty lofty promises about how far that's going to be within the next couple of years. So we're excited about that, and we're watching to see how that evolves. But meanwhile, they also have the ability, if your video is captioned, to translate that, and that option to translate captions is within the caption submenu that pops up. So you can select translate captions. You can then choose whichever of the 50 or more languages that they support, and the captions then appear on your screen in that language. And I've gotten some feedback from people who are native speakers of a wide variety of different languages that say it's not perfect, but it is a very good translation. And they generally feel that a person who doesn't speak English would have a general understanding, at least, of what's going on in the video in most cases. And so that really is an important and exciting breakthrough, I think. So there are some distinctions that we all need to understand. First of all, there are a couple different broad sort of categories of captions. There's closed caption, which is contained within a separate track or file, and the basic distinction is that you can turn it on or off. So a closed caption has some mechanism by which the user can turn it on or turn it off. And so that is an advantage. You know, some people benefit from having it on, some people benefit from having it off, and you know, users can make that choice. Also, in theory, that because it's a separate track, it's not actual video, it's text, then it can be controlled in terms of how it's presented. So the font size can be larger, you can control the font color, the background color, that sort of thing. I say in theory because that's not widely supported yet, but it's getting better all the time. That there are a lot of players that do provide at least some control over how captions are displayed, and that can be controlled and manipulated over time. So, for example, in the YouTube video, the YouTube player, if the player has focus, then the user can hit the plus key on their keyboard to enlarge the font, and that enlarges a few times. I think you can do three times enlargement, and then minus sign reverses that, so you go back down again with the minus sign. And then there's also the letter B is a toggle that turns the background on and off, so you can have a semi-transparent black background behind the caption text to make it stand out a little bit better. And then also with closed captions, it takes a separate text track in order to make the caption searchable and translatable, and so that's an advantage of closed caption over open. Open, on the other hand, is where you can't turn it off. And this isn't necessarily technically true the way I've defined it here, but generally it is that the open captions are mixed or burned into the video. And so it actually becomes part of the video itself. And so an advantage of that is that you can produce very good quality, perfect positioning, good contrast, really take care to control the presentation as a video author. And historically, that's what we at Do-It have done with our videos. We've used open captions. We have a very large font, and we place that in such a way that it really makes the captions usable and easy to read. It also is always on, so the user can't turn it off. And in some ways, that's a good thing. In some ways, it's a bad thing because, again, user preference is always good. But for our purposes, we use our videos a lot in training situations, and there may be people in the audience who benefit from captions but don't necessarily even know that. We've actually gotten that feedback quite a bit, that people who, if, for example, don't speak English as their first language, or just process information better if it's coming from a couple of different modes, they can listen and read at the same time and they process better. So having the open captions there just available for everyone, even people who wouldn't choose to turn them on, that can be a benefit. Also, if you distribute the video, then closed captions can be problematic in that if you've got a separate text file and a video file, then those don't necessarily travel together. So you send somebody the video, but you don't send the caption file with it. It's easier for the two to get separated if they're closed caption, as opposed to open caption, where you just send the one file and the captions go with it. So, how do we add captions? Well, first of all, the very first step is to create a transcript. And sometimes I get the question, do I need to also provide a transcript if I provide captions? And we're going to talk about that a little bit later, but it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense because a transcript is the first step in the captioning process. And it really is, I would say, about 90% of the work. That if you have a transcript already, then you're almost there. After that, everything really becomes pretty trivial. The second step, after you have a transcript, is to divide that transcript into caption size segments. And so basically you just sort of imagine, you know, what a one or two, maybe three line caption is going to look like. You break that into logical chunks so that the content of that caption sort of stands alone. Like ideally, you know, if you've got a sentence that would fit within the space of a caption at the bottom of the screen, then that sentence would be the caption, and then you would break after the period. If the sentence is too long to fit as one caption, then you sort of look at the ideas that are being communicated by that sentence and, you know, keep phrases together and don't have, you know, dangling participles or whatever. But, you know, organize it in a way that makes sense. Break it into captions. Usually the technique involves just putting a blank line in between the caption text. And then you use a captioning tool to timestamp each of those chunks of text. So you basically have defined your captions within the transcript. You go through using a captioning tool, and usually just with a single keystroke, you strike that key whenever you want a new caption to appear. So I'll talk in a moment about some of the specific tools that you use to do that. So on the slide it says that dividing the transcript into caption-sized chunks is optional, and it is actually. It depends on your choice of tools. One of the things that YouTube does really well right now already is if you have a transcript and you upload that transcript along with the video, then it will do automatic timestamping. So I apologize, I'm pausing as I'm getting an Illuminate progress message on the screen. Hopefully that wasn't critical. Still, can y'all hear me still?
Yes, go ahead, Terrell.
Okay. Okay, now I have an echo. All right, can you hear me still?
Yes, still hearing you.
All right, thank you. They just turned my audio down, so if you need me, jump up and down and virtually shout or something. So with tools like YouTube, and there are others as well, Automatic Sync is another that comes to mind, as well as 3Play Media. These are a couple of companies that provide a service where you can upload a video, upload a transcript, and they then automatically timestamp and create a caption file from that. They're using speech processing technology. They're not very good. Speech processing technology is not very good yet at automatically understanding what's being said. But if there is a transcript provided, it knows what's being said, and it can figure out when it's being said by listening to the audio. So it actually is very good at that. So YouTube is doing this for free, and so if you upload your transcript to YouTube, then it will add the timestamps, and you can download that file and use it in other video formats. So it's a very cool technology. So when you're finished, if you are manually adding the timestamps, or if you have it automatically done, then you have different file types that are required in order to display the captions in different media channels. And so if you're using Windows versus QuickTime versus Flash versus some sort of online video player, then the needs in terms of captioning file format are all different. And so you need to save as the type of file that is appropriate for whatever your media type is. And so we'll talk a little bit more in a bit about what some of those different formats are. So first of all, the captioning tools. We have products that are sort of ranging from free software to commercial software to free online tools. There's a lot of tools in the mix out there, and actually the free online tools seem to be expanding all the time. There are about a dozen or so that I'm aware of that will allow you to either upload videos or enter a YouTube URL, and it's able to grab the video from the YouTube URL, and then you can caption that for YouTube. They all support exporting to various formats, and they all basically are the same, although they have slightly different functionality. I have a link on my slide here to my blog, where I a while back did a comparison of several of the free tools that are available for captioning YouTube videos, which can also be used for captioning other video types. And I actually plan to update that because I've looked at some of those tools over the last week since I'm doing quite a bit of presenting on this topic at AHEAD. Revisited some of those tools, and there's some new ones since I did that blog post. And so probably sometime this week I will update that. So my blog is at, if you just go to terrellthompson.com, just my name, then there's a link there to my blog, and you can get access to that information. And I've got a lot of information there, actually, about accessible video and accessible video players and so forth. So after doing a comparison of all these free tools, one that I've kind of settled on is dotsub.com. It has a really nice interface that you can use with a keyboard. And one of the nice things about it is not only that you can use it with a keyboard, but that it displays all the keyboard shortcuts right there as part of the interface. So I've got a screenshot of that on the slide now. And basically, all caption tools sort of look the same, where they typically have a player usually positioned on the left side that allows you to play and pause and rewind and forward the video. And then they have, next to that, some sort of grid that displays caption text and displays a start time and a stop time for that caption. And so the workflow then is you play the video, and you just play a short segment, then you pause, you type in what you just heard, you play again, pause, type, play, pause, type, play, pause, type. And so this is why having a keyboard interface where you're doing all this with hotkeys, Control-Shift-P is a play, pause, toggle, for example, in DotSub, then that just becomes critical to doing this efficiently. So you do Control-Shift-P, listen, Control-Shift-P to pause, type what you just heard, Control-Shift-P to play again, and it really goes quite smoothly. And then as the caption ends, you press Enter twice, and that creates a new caption, and then starts the next caption at that same starting time. So then you generally have to go back and listen and make sure that your captions are synced up and that you've allowed enough time for somebody to read the caption text. And then you might need to tweak the start time or the end time a little bit on some captions and just do a little bit of editing. But generally, it just takes a couple of pass-throughs. You watch the video once and done the transcription, and then you've gone through and you've tweaked it to make sure the timestamps are in good shape. There's some other tools that don't timestamp live. You just transcribe live, and then you go back and listen and hit a function key. F7 would be an example. So you're listening to the video, and every time the next caption is supposed to be displayed, you hit F7, and it adds a start time at that point that syncs it with the video. And so all tools basically work like this. There's another one called universalsubtitles.org. It's another one of the online free tools that has introduced a new model that I think is pretty cool. It takes a little bit of getting used to, but it automatically will pause and play based on where you are. And so as you're typing and watching the video, it's sort of monitoring that. It'll pause and give you some time to catch up, and then after a certain period of time, it starts playing again. And usually it'll rewind a little bit and play the last couple seconds of what you just heard to make sure you got that right. And so it's an automated process, eliminating the need to do something like Control-Shift-P. So basically, if you get good and fluid at using universal subtitles, then all you have to do is listen and type, and then in theory you could be done in one pass. And so it's actually quite nice. And both of these DotSub universal subtitles and some other tools as well, Subtitle Horse, CaptionTube, they all support YouTube URLs. And so all you have to do is enter in a YouTube address, and it'll find the video from within that page and allows you to generate captions of that YouTube page, or that YouTube video. And so if you're not the owner of that video, though, you don't necessarily, well, you then cannot upload captions to that YouTube video. So the captions that you produce will display in the player within these sites, but won't display on YouTube itself. However, we've had some success sending that caption file to the author and saying, hey, we did you a favor and captioned your YouTube video. You know, would you mind, you know, adding it to your video? And along with some instructions about how to do that in YouTube. And generally, we've never gotten a negative response for that. We've either gotten a, sure, be happy to, thank you so much for doing that, or just no response at all, probably because people have stopped monitoring their YouTube account. But alternatively, as an accommodation for those of you in higher education, one could provide captions through, for example, the .sub interface. And so there actually is a permanent link to the videos that you produce on these sites. And so you could give that link to users. And with .sub, those can be private. And so only people who have the URL can access them. They're not announced. Universal Subtitles, that's not true. Everything is public with that site. But with .sub, I actually have known some folks in higher education have used this as an accommodation strategy where if they can't get captions uploaded to YouTube, then they'll use the .sub interface to stream that YouTube video with captions and provide access just to the student for that particular video. So pretty handy tools. And then here's a link, also a slide that describes the semi-automated captioning tools. I mentioned Automatic Sync, who does the caption sync tool. YouTube does this. 3playmedia.com does this, where 3 is the number 3, so it's 3, the number 3, playmedia.com. And DocSoft is another company that specializes in this type of solution. So the different flavors of closed captions that are available, there are a number of different types. I read something recently where there's something like 72 different types of captions. Those that I work with most commonly, and that I think most people work with most commonly, are listed here. QuickTime does captioning via a SMILE file. That's a W3C, World Wide Web Consortium standard. Stands for Synchronized Multimedia Integration Language. And what SMILE is basically a wrapper that puts a bunch of different time-synced media together and synchronizes them. So it can be used for captioning. It can also be used for lots of other things, for karaoke, for example, or you know, any situation where you have media, a couple different media that you want to synchronize. And so the way SMILE works is it will point to a video file and will also point to a caption file, and those two then, since they're both pointed to within the SMILE file, become synchronized. And so QuickTime does this with its own caption format, QuickTime text file. RealPlayer also supports SMILE, but it supports it with its own caption format, which is real text format. And Windows provides, and they don't support SMILE, they have an entirely different standard that they've created for themselves, which is called SAMI, a very similar sort of acronym, and I think the S, the M, and the I may all be the same, but there's an A in there too. I forget exactly what it spells out. But basically, it's one file that contains everything you need in terms of the captions. So you don't have to have two files. It seems anymore I'm not encountering a whole lot of people who are using QuickTime Real and Windows files because they're delivering content over the web and there are other techniques for doing that with web-based players. And the web-based players tend to be a lot more ubiquitous where people can access them from any browser and they're not so tied to a particular platform as they are with QuickTime Real and Windows. YouTube actually supports a number of different formats, but in their documentation they claim to support SubRip, And we're going to look at actually some of these different file types to see just sort of quickly how they differ from one another. Apple iOS devices have a different approach. They use an SCC file. And that's a binary file. It isn't actually text that you can just go in and edit. Like all the other formats are just plain text. We'll talk about that in a bit. And there actually is an Apple solution that involves plain text captioning too, which I'll mention in a moment. Partly in response to all these different caption formats just over the years, you know, there have just been dozens of different formats that have emerged. So the W3C, being the standards organization for the web, stepped forward a few years ago and said, we really need a standard timed text format. And they created one. And that was approved and became a W3C recommendation, or W3C standard. And it is it's just called timed text. It's an XML format that groups captions basically into paragraphs. It looks a lot like HTML, and each caption is a paragraph with parameters that define the start time and the end time of each of those paragraphs. We also have a new standard with HTML5, HTML being the language that makes up the web. HTML5 is currently in draft. They're working on an update to that specification. Huge changes within the HTML world. And along with that, there is a new standard for video timed text. And we're going to look at that in just a moment and talk about how that affects what we do in the way of accessibility. So just some real quick examples of some of these file types. Here is a subrip file. This is the type of file that YouTube recommends that you upload to them. It's a very simple and straightforward file. It just has a start time and caption text beneath that, and then a blank line in between the different captions. And here's a W3C timed text file. This is an XML format again, and as I mentioned earlier, it's the captions themselves are just a bunch of paragraph tags, just like in a web page. There's a begin attribute, which defines the begin time, the start time, and there is an end attribute that defines the end time, or optionally you can skip the end attribute and replace that with a duration attribute, which gives the duration of the caption. Okay, so I seem to have gotten disconnected. Is that true? Can you still hear me?
We can still hear you, Cheryl, so carry on. Cheryl, can you hear me? We can hear you loud and clear.
You can hear me loud and clear?
Yes,
okay.
Go ahead.
Periodically, Illuminate seems to be trying to reconnect, and that time it said reconnection failed. But apparently it was lying.
Don't worry about that, Cheryl. Celestine is trying to get the telephone bridge working. It is not affecting your presentation. So I apologize for the little screenshots, but it is not affecting what you're doing. So if you could just ignore those, as with this one that's right up there right now, it's not affecting what you're doing.
Okay. Am I able to, if I cancel that, does it go away? Or will that adversely affect what she's doing?
It may affect what she's doing. I'll just send her a message and just ask her if they can leave that for the moment, unless there is somebody who in particular is needing that bridge.
Okay. I ask because when it pops up, I'm not able to advance the slide.
Line muted.
Okay, I'm sure she's hearing this too, and I'll send her that message. Carry on.
Okay, all right. So a bit more then about WebVTT format. This is the new format, and a few people crying, you know, why do we need another format when we've got the W3C timed text standard, and there are still a few people that are asking that question. But basically, WebVTT is based on the subrip format. In fact, originally
line
it was called
muted.
WebSRT, and They
line unmuted.
Recently changed the name. But it is a draft spec. And it I've provided links on the slides here to a couple of resources. Actually, if you just do a Google search for Web VTT, then you'll find these and some other resources that are worth looking at. There's a very good video of a presentation that was given to Google on Web VTT and how it can be utilized. And that really summarizes everything about this new format. But so some good resources out there that address this format. We can use it for captions. We can also use it for audio descriptions, which we're going to be talking about a little bit later.
Conference recording started.
There's a Web VTT example. Looks like a subrip file. It has each of the captions is numbered. We have a start time. We have a dash dash arrow and then an end time. And then the caption text appears underneath that. But there's other markup that we can add to the captions to control how they're displayed. So we've got all sorts of presentational features that are built into Web VTT. So with YouTube, how do you upload captions? Well, it's actually pretty straightforward. The image that you see here is from an older version of YouTube. It's changed slightly, and it's really hard to keep up with versioning in YouTube because they seem to change. Almost every week you've got something new happening. But if you have an account on YouTube, you upload video in some prominent place within your account settings. On a video screen, you will see an option to go in and work with captions and subtitles. And so if you select that, then just follow the prompts and you're off to the races. And I mentioned the automated captioning that YouTube is doing. You can ask it to do that for your video, and then you can download what it comes up with. And that then gives you a caption file as a starting point. You can import that then into any free captioning tool and just edit it. We actually did some testing with some students where we had them try that process and try editing videos or captioning videos from scratch just to see if there was a real time saver from this automated captioning process. And it really varies. The bottom line is if you have a good video with good quality sound production and a speaker who articulates very well, doesn't have an accent, then it can do a very good job. It can be, I don't know what they claim in terms of percentage accuracy, but maybe somewhere around 85 to 90% accurate. And then it's just a matter of going in and cleaning up some of the mistakes. And if there aren't many, then that can be a very quick process. So it really can be a time saver. And as that technology gets more accurate, that's going to be great. Most videos, from my experience, at least higher education videos, are not so good. Even those that are just a lecture capture, typically the professor doesn't speak so clearly and they are in a lecture hall that doesn't have optimal acoustics. And so what you end up with is an automated caption that has a lot of mistakes, and then depending on the severity of those, it can be a lot easier just to start over from scratch because you can really get into a rhythm when you're transcribing from scratch as opposed to having to go through and hunt for edits and then select something with a mouse and cut it and paste something else. So that becomes a lot less rhythmic and therefore a lot less efficient process sometimes. But anyway, YouTube provides this interface. They support captions, and it's pretty easy to use once you go in and just click on that captions and subtitles option. For iTunes and iOS, iPads, iPhones, all those Apple devices, they have a different sort of approach. They're using FCC format, which I mentioned is a binary format, so you can't edit the caption text files directly. The way that you merge the captions with the video is not just as simple as pointing to it with most other video players, you just say, here's the video file, here's the caption file, and just reference those in some sort of text file. But with Apple, you actually have to merge the media together using a tool like Apple's Final Cut Pro, which is $999 last time I checked. You can also do it with QuickTime Pro for a lot less money. And the key component to Final Cut Pro is actually Apple's compressor. And I understand that you can actually get that independently. So if all you really need to do is add captions, then for $49.99 you can get compressor. But it's a pretty complex process and more than I want to go into now. But there's a great document at the NCAM website, National Center on Accessible Media, at ncam.wgbh.org, that goes into great depth about how to add captions to iOS devices. So here's just a screenshot of an SCC file, so you can kind of get a sense for how miserable that would be to try and edit. You can't. And here's a screenshot of what closed caption video actually looks like on an iPhone. It actually is closed caption in that you can go into your settings on an iPhone or an iPod and turn captions on or off. It appears just like sort of line 21 broadcast captions. It's in a courier font that appears over the lower third of the screen. And alternatively, what we've done, rather than take that approach, you can't control the size or anything on the iDevices, and so the presentation of the fonts is, from feedback that we've gotten and just from our own intuition, is not very attractive. And so we actually just use open captions. We create open caption videos and deliver those to iTunes and iDevices. And so that gives us control over what font is displayed and how large it is. And we go a little bit larger than what is available through the closed caption interface. And we just are a lot more satisfied, and our users are a lot more satisfied too with the result. So that's an alternative, much more straightforward process. It's just use open caption video. So return then to the slide, making video accessible to whom? And we have all those bullet points for people that we want to provide accessible video to. And we have marked off three of those groups by providing captions. We are making video accessible to people who can't hear it, people who want to search it, and people who want to translate it. And so this is a good pausing point because we're going to move on from captions. So I want to see if there are any questions at this point related to captions.
Jerry, yes, thank you very much. We do have quite a few questions that have been coming along, some of which I think you answered along the way. So for the earlier ones, there was a question about how, if you had a visual of adding captions, and I think you demonstrated that very nicely, and also what a transcript actually looked like. Somebody had a question about, are these captioning tools themselves accessible to anybody to use them, as opposed to, you know, the end result, which is obviously what we're after, but can the tool itself be considered to be accessible? Could you answer that one?
Yeah, this is a good question, and unfortunately it's one that I typically have to answer no to, which is a shame, really, that so many accessible tools, not just in the captioning space, but web accessibility checkers and so forth too, often are not in and of themselves accessible, even though their goal is to make the world more accessible in some way. So that said, some are more accessible than others, and my review of the various free online tools takes accessibility into account. DocSub is one of the more accessible tools. It's not perfect, but if you can find your way to the player itself, then, as I mentioned, it is fully keyboard controllable and works pretty well with the screen reader. The lack of perfection makes it a bit challenging for screen reader users to figure out where they are initially. But the key to making it work is getting in the box where you enter captions. And if you can just find your way to that box, and I think, as I recall, it's not very adequately labeled, and so it's not super obvious that you're in that box. But once you're there, then everything works smoothly, and even with a screen reader, you can control the player and, you know, do all the playing and pausing and typing and so forth. And so that works pretty well. Another tool that we used to talk about almost exclusively when we're talking about captioning is Magpie, which I think has fairly decent accessibility. It is a Java applet, and so it requires that you have the necessary tools, the Java Access Bridge installed if you're a screen reader user, in order to take advantage of the accessibility features there. But I think once that's in place, it's fairly accessible as well, but I'll qualify that with the fairly, that hey, I think it's not necessarily easy to use. So I think there's room for improvement still in this area, but from my experience, .sub is probably your best bet for an accessible captioning, a reasonably accessible captioning tool.
Great, thank you. Somebody had a question about whether Illuminate is using one of these tools, and did we in fact upload a script first? And the answer to that is no, we do not use a tool. We do have a live captioner. Today's captioner is Tina, and we're very grateful for Tina to be available, but no, Illuminate, the way that we use it, we do not use a transcript tool for our purposes. Another question was, what do you do about animation without voice? And probably coupled with that would be the question of how do you manage complex mathematical problems?
Those are both very good questions. First of all, captioning is in part providing access to what is audible. And so with mathematical problems, the professor or whoever whatever the dialogue is, that's what would be verbalized. And there are some resources that talk a bit about how to express in text complex formulas and that sort of thing. Because that then becomes the question of how do you actually write that out after you've heard it. And I can't remember the resource off the top of my head, but there is a resource that talks a lot about captioning conventions, and they go into a little bit of detail, not a great amount of detail, but some detail in terms of how you caption formulas, what some of the rules are there for doing that. Otherwise, with the animations and so forth, captions, keep in mind, are providing access to somebody that can't hear what's going on, and so the idea is to capture anything that's audible. And so typically, you know, there might be some things beyond what's spoken that are audible content. So, for example, if there's music playing or if there's applause or people laughing, then you want to make sure to capture all that because it's a critical piece of the content. If there is something happening visually, some animation, somebody who can't see it wouldn't have access, that's another issue, and that's the second bullet in our the slide that's on the screen now. And so we'll be talking about that in a moment.
Great. Okay. Well, I know that there are a lot more questions, but I think we should continue because we're down to just before 12 o'clock and lots more to go. So please keep the questions coming. I will make note of them. But if we don't get to all of them, I do apologize. But please keep them coming and let's carry on with the presentation. So thanks, Terrell. Off you go.
All right. So, actually, that last question was a good transition into accessibility solution number two, which is audio description. So this is, if there's visual content and it's not communicated audibly, then we need audio description. We need a description track that describes what's happening to people that can't see it. So for the most part, people who are blind or visually impaired can get what's happening in video content, particularly training videos and lectures, because most of what's happening is audible. But in some cases, that's not entirely true. If there is something that's being displayed on the screen, You know, if a professor is writing something on the screen but not verbalizing it, then that becomes something that's going to need to be described. It's critical content that the person who can't see it doesn't have access to. And so the solution, audio description, again, like captioning, it can be either open or closed, where the user can turn it on or off or not. And if it is closed, then there are a couple of different ways of delivering it. It can be delivered as recorded audio that gets synchronized with the video, or it the new method that hasn't fully been tested and figured out yet, but the HTML5 method is time-stamped text, which is read with synthesized speech. So I'm going to talk about each of these different methods in a bit more depth. First of all, some of you may know audio description by other terms, and so just to clarify that, there are lots of other terms that are used to describe it. It's called audio description because audio is the medium by which you're describing it. But it can also be called video description because you are describing video content, visual content. And so that, to me, has always been a bit confusing, that audio description and video description really are synonyms. There's also descriptive video, which actually is a trademark of WGBH, but it's sort of like the Coke of the pop world. People use it to mean audio description all the time, or DVS, but that actually is WGBH's trade name. Descriptive narration, described video, and just plain description, all of those are used to describe this particular technique or method or technology. And first of all, I'll say that there are ways to avoid audio description, and I encourage people to practice these wherever possible. Because audio description is a bit of a process and an art form, and it's kind of hard to persuade people to do it. And so the best bet is to avoid doing it if you can. And one way to do that, I mentioned the professor who doesn't describe what he's writing on the board. Well, every professor should describe what they're writing on the board, because they don't know, you know, who might not be able to see that. Maybe, you know, somebody sitting in the back of the room, somebody who has a visual impairment that they don't realize, or particularly if they're filming, then the audience is much larger than just the people that are present in the room at that given moment. But it's always a good practice to be sure that everything is described as if your audience, everybody in your audience is blind. I guess I've covered that point. So if you still need to add audio description, then here is the process by which you do it. First of all, you carefully script the description, and you don't need to provide too much detail. This is kind of like adding alt text to images, those of you who are familiar with that process on web pages. If you have an image, you need to just provide whatever image that, or whatever content that image is intended to communicate. So usually it's just a very short word or phrase. And with a lot of audio description, it can be the same sort of thing. We would do it, we get all of our videos professionally audio described, and a lot of times the descriptions are very sparse, where they will say the names of speakers. If we have like some new speaker is talking on the screen, and a graphic pops up that says who that speaker is and who the, you know, what organization they're with, then if that isn't communicated audibly, then the audio description would provide access to that information. Or if the title appears at the beginning of the video, then usually the audio description would include that. So, but just very short bits of information. So you need to carefully choose your words, because however you do describe something does sort of affect how people perceive it. And so if you're using an adjective to describe a change in scenery, for example, then you just need to be sort of cognizant that however you present that is really going to affect how people perceive it. Then you also need to, as you're writing this audio description script, you need to be sort of aware of where this is going to be injected within the flow of the audio. You need to find kind of a pause or a spot where there is no other audio in order to stick it in. And sometimes it's just a second or two. And so you need to be really short and choose your words accordingly. And also make note in your script of when that occurs and what some cues are, you know, that are leading up to that. So you're ready when it comes time to record to jump in and say what you need to say. So that's the first step, regardless of what your method is to write that script, to carefully compose your audio description. Then, if you're going to do a recorded description, the second step is to record it. So you actually just watch the video, use some sort of software that will allow you to record, and you know, make sure that you're in sync. So you start recording at exactly zero when you push the your play button on the video, record button on the player, and record the script that you wrote, you know, at the appropriate times. You provide the description. A tool, I mentioned Magpie earlier. Magpie is a captioning tool that also serves as an audio description tool. And so you can choose in Magpie, when you insert a new track, it's going to offer you a choice of either captions or audio description. What type of track is this? And if you say audio description, then it's going to give you a recording interface and will allow you to record each of the segments separately. So every little piece of audio description you would record separately, and those would all be independent audio files in the end that would get wrapped via a Smile file into one presentation. So other tools that support this, though, have expected just one long MP3 file, and so you just watch the video and offer the description at the appropriate point in time. One challenge with this technique is that if your recording audio is significant, if the volume is significantly different than the audio volume of the program audio, then it's going to result possibly in some clashing. And so you want to, you know, try to control that to the extent possible, but that's, you know, often very hard to do. So what you do with that recording then, if you're doing closed description, then it actually is going to be a separate audio file. So you'd save it, for example, as an MP3. And the idea then is that the media player would sync it up with the video and would provide a toggle button that would allow the user to turn the description on or off as needed. Alternatively, if you provide open description, then you would use some video editing software to take the audio file that you have produced and mix it into the program audio and re-encode that video. And so this is what the professionals do. And you can hear, if you listen to an audio described video, for example, any of the Do-It videos at our website, I'll give you the URL a little bit later, then what you hear with the professionals is some mixing going on where they will actually lower the volume of the program audio enough so that the audio description can be heard over top of that. And then they, you know, gradually raise the level of the program audio afterwards. So it's a very flowing sort of experience, and the audio description, you know, doesn't become intrusive then and mess up the flow of the video content itself. So lots of considerations with sort of how you do this and whether you have the technology and the expertise to go in and do this sort of mixing and re-encoding. Ultimately, I think that's the best solution at this point, is to do open description if you're able to do that. But the advantage of closed description is it's just quick. You create an audio file, you've got it, you slap it into your player, and it plays it. Or you do a text biz without any recording at all, and that is even easier still. So there's very little audio description happening out there, and one of our goals is to get more of that happening. And so the simpler it is, the more likely people are to do it. But if you have the time and the resources and the expertise, then I think open description is really the way to do it better, to maximize usability and maximize quality. For text biz, basically what you do is the same as what you do with captions. You can use all the same tools, in fact. You create a caption file, except instead of typing in captions, you're typing in descriptions. And when you timestamp it, with captions, we selected the start and the end time of the caption. For description, we would select the start time, not the end time, but just the start time of when we want this description to be read. We don't specify the end time because it's a screen reader that's going to be reading this, and it'll finish when it finishes. So it's actually one of the downsides of this approach is that we don't have any control over the user's speed, their speech output. For the most part, most users, from my experience, read at blazing speeds. Some, though, might be operating a little bit slower. And so if you count on and sort of expect users to have a fast speed screen reader, and you time things accordingly, you have maybe a half second to insert an audio description, so you do it. But then, you know, if somebody comes along with a slower speed of the screen reader, then they're not, there's going to be overflow where that description is going to clash with the program audio. And so you need to be really careful with that and understand that there is going to be that variability. But so the process then again is use a captioning tool, type in your descriptions, add the start times for those descriptions, and then export to a format that's supported by your player. Now there's not really any support yet, so the format that you choose would actually be SRT at this point, because SRT, as I mentioned earlier, is pretty much the same as WebVTT at its most basic. And so for HTML5, there is a track tag, which is how we deliver captions, and it's how we deliver descriptions. And both of those use the WebVTT format. So the only difference with description is that we use the kind attribute to say kind equals description, and then the HTML5 player knows that this is a description. But then the source that we point to, the source file, is going to be a WebVTT file. But basically, again, WebVTT is based on SRT, and so if you save it as an SRT file, then there's one final change you would need to make. You need to go into the file and enter WebVTT in capital letters at the top of the file. That's a required component in WebVTT files. With that, everything else you have in your SRT file is valid VTT. So that it sounded to me like that might have gotten a little confusing, but let me go back to the top of the slide and we'll just kind of walk through it step by step. These are the players that currently support audio description. There actually are a couple that are missing here, I should mention. Those are QuickTime and Reel. Both support audio description in the form that Magpie produces it. So again, what Magpie does is it creates a SMILE file that includes different audio files for each audio description segment. And so each of those has a start time. So it knows that, for example, if there's an audio description wave file that's supposed to be played at 2 minutes in the video, when the video player gets to 2 minutes, it plays that file, and that's all wrapped together in a SMILE file. So because QuickTime and Reel both support SMILE, they both support audio description through that mechanism. In QuickTime, there's no means of turning it off. Whatever's in the SMILE file gets displayed or gets played. In Reel, there actually is a turn on audio description option. It's within the preferences, and it is off by default. So you have to go in, and captions is off by default too, so you have to go in and physically turn those on in Reel Player, if anybody's still using Reel Player. Otherwise, for video that's delivered over the web, you have two options. One is the JW player, which we're going to talk a bit more about as we talk about accessible media players. JW player is a Flash player that has a long history of embracing accessibility. They've done quite a bit to support accessibility features. And they have, for a long time, supported audio description as an MP3 file. And so you save your recorded audio as MP3, you just link to it, in the configuration of your player and the markup that you use to add the JW player to your web page. And it then creates, it adds an audio description button to the controller bar and allows users to turn that on and off. And it also has some other cool features in the way that it supports audio description. So if there's time, I'll talk a bit about those features. And then HTML5 video uses this web VTT format, uses the track tag, which would be nested inside a video tag, to provide captions and audio descriptions. Currently, no browser supports either captions or audio descriptions in the video, HTML5 video tag. All the major browsers now, with IE9 being the last one to jump in, now do support video, but they don't yet support the accessibility features of video. And so it's HTML5 is still a draft spec, and they're all still trying to figure it out. So I believe it's probably coming. And I think since accessibility is actually, in my opinion, it's pretty high now on people's priority list, more so than it has been in the past, I think browsers are probably in a bit of a race behind the scenes to be the first to support at least captions. Description might be a ways off, but I think captions might get there. There is North Carolina State, and there are actually a few other examples too, but NC State's a good one that came out recently, has developed a proof of concept that actually uses the HTML5 video tag and uses the track element to deliver description in a way that screen readers can access it. And so I provided a link here on the slide to that blog post and the accompanying page that has the test player on it. So with HTML5, just a bit more about what video looks like. HTML5 is really going to revolutionize a lot of things web-related, including video, for better or for worse, hopefully for better. But it's very, very simple now to add video to web pages. What we have here in this slide is just a video opening tag, just angle bracket video, closing angle bracket, with a source equals myvideo.mp4 in quotes, and then a closing video tag. That is as simple as it needs to be. If you did this, you would get video in Safari, IE9, and Google Chrome. It wouldn't work in Firefox or Opera because they don't support MP4. So it gets a little more complicated. You have to add a couple of different video sources for all browsers to support it. And you have to add track elements to get full accessibility. So here is a fully fleshed out video tag in HTML5 that would include full accessibility. For those that are not put off by looking at HTML code, a few highlights here. What you see is this tab index equals 0. That makes the video tag tabbable, and that actually does work now in all the browsers, I think. You can, as you're tabbing through the web page, tabbing through links or through form fields, you can tab directly to the video player and access its controls with the keyboard, so you don't have to be a mouse user. So that's already a positive development in the way of accessibility. You can also then add these track elements.
Sorry, Terry, if I can just break in for a moment. We have 15 minutes left, so just an awareness of that, plus time for, that includes time for questions.
Okay, thanks for the heads up. I'll try to scurry along here so we'll have some time for questions. But so there's actually a lot of information online about HTML5 accessible video, including on my blog, so you can check that out and get more information about that and how it's supported. But some pretty exciting things. So closed audio description, as I mentioned, it's kind of hit and miss. One of the features that JW Player has introduced is ducking, which is a great idea. It's a little buggy still, but essentially the program audio gets softer whenever audio description is present. And so it's watching the audio description file and just waiting for an audio description. And then when it sees one, it lowers the program audio and then raises it afterwards. So that reduces that problem we're talking about with the conflict between the two tracks. Again, the speed of screen readers affects synchronization, and extended audio description might be required if you need to insert some description, but there just isn't enough time to do so. Then the technique that's recommended in the standards is to be able to pause the video, have your description read, and then resume playback after that. And there are no players that currently support that functionality. So it's still kind of a moving target. How we at Do Video, is we start with a script that minimizes the cost of transcription. We describe all visual content in the program audio, so that minimizes the need for audio description. We're very careful as we sort of script it to make sure that as much as possible is already described. And then both the captions and descriptions we outsource to companies that do this work. And then we deliver two versions of the video, although on the Do It Video site we're actually experimenting with different mechanisms for delivering closed description. We actually have a described version and a non-described version, and we let the user choose whether they need description or not. And then for YouTube, we actually are just uploading the described version because there's not a really good way to link the described version with the non-described version and make sure that people have that choice. So we want to make sure that we provide accessibility whenever possible. So going back to our checklist then, that's the fourth group. We've knocked off four of the bullets by providing captions and providing audio description. We still have a few left though. People who can't see or hear the content, people who can't use a mouse. Those are the two that are left. So regarding people who can't use a mouse and people who are using screen readers or braille devices, how do you choose an accessible media player? The questions you need to ask are, does it support closed captions? Does it support audio description? These things we've already been looking at. Can captions be customized by the user? So that's an ideal situation, is that captions are not only present, but the user has some control over them. Is it accessible by keyboard? So that's critical. And as I mentioned, HTML5 is now coming around to where browsers are supporting that natively, which is nice. But if not, does it have an API that allows control via HTML? So this is another nice thing about the JW player. I mentioned it's a Flash player. And as a Flash player, it is not accessible by keyboard except in Internet Explorer. So in Internet Explorer, you can tab into it and operate the controls and then tab out of it without using a mouse. With every other browser, you have to first click on a Flash object in order to give it focus, and then you can operate it with the keyboard. And that is true of the JW player, that you can access all the buttons and everything, but you have to be able to click first. So if somebody can't use a mouse, then they're stuck using Internet Explorer. Or if you can create your own controls, just standard HTML links or buttons that will operate the player, then that provides an accessibility solution. And the JW player and HTML5 both have an API that is robust enough that you have full control of everything the player can do and can use JavaScript to write up that control. So that's what we've done on the Do It Video site, is we have both an HTML5 player and a JW player. We've developed our own custom interface that controls both of those players through a single set of buttons, accessible buttons. So regarding the buttons, that's another question, even whether you're using Flash or something else, is are those buttons and controls accessible to screen reader users? When a screen reader user goes to the play button, does it say play button? Or does it say stop or fast forward or what have you? So some players are more accessible than others in that regard. Does it support scrubbing to a new start time? That's not necessarily an accessibility feature, but it's one that we've used for creating a caption search interface because we wanted to demonstrate the relationship between searchability and captions in order to sort of promote the need for captions. So I've listed a few pretty accessible players. The JW player I mentioned, it's the only player that supports audio description, and it's got all these other things that we desire in a player. The Ohio State University, JW Player Controls, they have built their own controls that operate the JW Player, a fully accessible set of controls. The latest version of the YouTube Player is pretty accessible, but as I mentioned, YouTube changes all the time, and so sometimes it's, you know, it's accessible one day and not the next, particularly for screen reader users. And the National Center for Accessible Media has built an accessible CC player, very good player in terms of screen reader accessibility. It has some really good thorough and detailed help available for screen reader users, as well as you know, labeled buttons and so forth. This is an image of the Do It video player, which utilizes, like I mentioned before, it is HTML5, and the JW player is fallback for browsers that don't have HTML5 support. It's the same player for both players, the same control, same interface for both players. This is a custom set of HTML5 or HTML buttons, fully screen reader accessible, fully accessible by tab in all browsers, and it's utilizing HTML5 and JW player sort of behind the scenes. So that covers everything except people who can't see or hear the content, in which case a transcript then becomes an important part of the solution. Somebody who's deaf and blind and they can read the transcript is not a substitute for captions, because captions are important for people that can access them because they provide that synchronicity between the text and what's happening visibly. But it does provide access for people who are deafblind or for people who just can't access the video because of slow internet connections or what have you. And also people who are busy, that, you know, it's pretty rare in today's world to have 30 minutes to sit and watch a video. But if you just want some content that's in that video, if you can access it via the transcript, you know, whenever a transcript is available, that tends to be my first source for information rather than watching the entire video. So that covers all of the people that we were looking to make content accessible to. I also have a few slides here about people who don't understand written language, particularly people who only understand sign language. It is a WCAG 2 standard. It's level 3A, so it's kind of a lower priority success criteria, but sign language interpretation should be provided for videos, and there are a few examples out there of custom players, JW players and Flash players, that do provide a sign language interpreter within the video. So I provided a few examples here. CreatureDiscomforts.com is one. It's British Sign Language, so if you're an ASL speaker, you probably won't understand a word that's being said there by the interpreter. And then there's a faculty member in California, I forget whether it's California State University or California Community College system, but on YouTube, he has a bunch of videos where he has a sign language interpreter in his videos, and they're really done pretty cleverly. So you might check that out, youtube.com/user/muchomath. I've got a few slides about just implementing accessible video within your organization. I realize that those in the audience are representing a variety of different organizations, but in general, from my experience within higher education, empowering the infrastructure is really critical. This isn't a disability services issue. It's an issue that is part of the video production process. So anybody who is creating multimedia, providing streaming services, providing training and support to people on how to produce video, those are all people that need to be part of and involved with the accessibility process. So, and then, you know, just documenting a procedure, making sure everybody involved understands how to make accessible video and is on board with that. Identify responsible parties so you know who's responsible for what. And include accessibility in all media discussions. So I know at our institution we're talking a lot now about different things related to video, and you know, primarily because we've just got so much video out there, 26 different YouTube channels and a corresponding number of iTunes channels. We're trying to sort of rein some of that in and control some of the branding that's happening. And in captioning, then we're at the table talking about captioning and audio description as part of that discussion. Also, if you get all these parties together, then you can collaborate and negotiate some really good prices for transcription and captioning services. So if you're going to outsource some of it, then it just makes sense for all of these different groups to come together and collaborate. And as if you're in a position where you're trying to sell the need for accessibility, then I really find that stressing all the beneficiaries and talking about universal design and not just about people with disabilities, but all the other people we've talked about, people who need to search, who don't understand the language, people who don't have sufficient internet bandwidth, people who are busy, all these are people that everybody can relate to, and so, you know, it's accessibility benefits everyone, and it really helps to make the case, I think, to stress that. Got some URLs for learning more. The Do It video site is our experiment in making video accessible. So we've done a lot of different things using HTML5, JW Player. We've got caption video, audio described video, plus some good content, I think. So that's at uw.edu/doit/video. And then there's more also at my site, terrellthompson.com, where you can access my blog and other content. So we don't have a whole lot of time, but I'll take questions for as long as I'm here, for as long as we're able to stay.
That's wonderful. Thanks, Terrell, very much. That was really very interesting and lots of questions and thoughts from everybody. So just to get on to some of those questions, for those of you who can stay, please do so. We will be able to stay for a little bit longer. So if Terrell is available, which it sounds like he is, we can keep going for a short while longer. A couple of the other questions that came through. One question had to do with captioning. Are you familiar with the product called Slick Captioning by G3? And do you know it, and do you like it?
G3 Slick Captioning. I actually have never heard of that, but I'm making a note to look into it further.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Can you, on YouTube, can you upload a video with no transcript, use their automated process, and then download it with the transcript?
Yes. So, okay. And again, that'll be as useful as the transcript that they produce. But if they come up with a good automated transcript, then what you download is actually a caption file. So they have timestamped it, not just transcribed it, but timestamped it. And then you can go in and edit that. If you want to use that as a transcript, then you just go through and take the timestamps out.
Great. Okay, that's a useful thing to know. Somebody was asking about doing something like that and then taking the video across to something called CaptionTube, which apparently was not very user-friendly some time back. Are you familiar with CaptionTube, and do you know if that has become any more user-friendly?
It has improved its functionality in one way, and that is that it now has a seamless integration with your YouTube account. Previously, you had to, if you signed in as a YouTube user and could caption your videos that you own, or other people's videos as well, but if you own the video, then it would make sense that since you signed in as a YouTube user that you'd be able to save your work directly to your YouTube account and your videos would automatically be captioned. In the past, that wasn't true, but now I just noticed the other day that they do support that now, so you don't have to go through the process of downloading the captioned video and then re-uploading it to YouTube. So in that sense, it has improved, but otherwise, I would agree with you, it's not one of my favorites and not one of the more usable of the free tools that are available.
Lovely, thank you. Okay, then there is a question about the Acorn Media Player jQuery plugin. Have you used that, and do you have any comments on that particular one?
I have not used that.
Okay, so that would answer that question about do you have any information about the accessibility and customization on that.
I will say, though, that G3 Slick Captioning, I have written that down, so I'll look into it. Somehow or another, I can maybe I don't know. We'll figure out a way to communicate back to folks, but I can share my thoughts about each of these things.
Okay, that's super. And just a comment on that is that we are still recording this session. So in a couple of days, we will have not just the PowerPoint presentation, but we will have this recording available on the archives file as well. So any of your comments that you're making right now will also be included in that recording for people to follow up with at a later point.
Okay.
Great. Okay. I'm just looking to see. I don't see any other questions right now. Oh, yes, there is one. Will the captions and transcript be cleaned up? To a certain extent, it will be, but because it is a live recording, it will. You know, there's only going to be a limited amount of cleaning up that we can do. But certainly, that will be available shortly. Do we have any other questions directly for Terrell that anybody has before we close off the session? I'm not seeing anything coming in directly on the chat at this stage. So I guess that looks like we've made it. Great timing. Terrell, once again, thank you so much. This has been fabulous information. I'm sure that that people got a great deal out of it, judging from the comments. It's been wonderful, and certainly it looks like we will probably need to do a follow-up. There's just so much more that can be said, and certainly in terms of the actual hands-on stuff, that has been really useful too. So for those of you who may still have some questions or are not able to get them to us in time now, please also contact your regional ADA center, and the telephone number for that, which will take you to wherever you are in the country, is 800-949-4232. That's 800-949-4232, and that is Voice and TTY. So please feel free to contact us at that stage for anything else that you have regarding this presentation or anything else to do with the Americans with Disabilities Act and accessible technology. We'd be happy to answer your questions. Last question coming in. For someone starting out, which platform would you recommend?
Someone starting out in what, Nancy? In captioning or?
Captioning.
I guess I would recommend just trying out the different free tools and playing with them and figure out, what you like. And those are, since they're free and they're web-based, and they're operating system neutral, so it doesn't matter whether you're on a Mac or a Windows machine, you can use any of them. But just sort of play around with those and get a feel for how the process works. And the process is really the same in all the tools. I like .sub a lot, so maybe start with that. Maybe try Universal Subtitles. Subtitle Horse is another one that one of my co-presenters here at AHEAD prefers that over all the others. And so everybody kind of has their own opinions in terms of interface and what they like and dislike. But those the free tools are probably a good place to kind of get comfortable with how it all works.
Great, thank you. And then just one last one is that we really would appreciate everybody's feedback on this particular session. So I have put up the evaluation survey link, and if you do have a few moments, we would be very grateful if you'd go to that link. And that link is ada://ada-conferences.july12211.sqizmo.com. Hopefully that will translate correctly onto the screen. So it is ada-conferences.july12211.sqizmo.com. All right, and once again, thank you so much, Terrell Thompson, our speaker, for sharing your time and knowledge with us today. It's been wonderful, and we trust that everybody has learned something and can take it away. Thanks, everybody, and we look forward to seeing you at our next conference, which will be in 2 months' time.
Great. Thank you.
We will be closing the chat room now, so thank you again, everybody, and enjoy the rest of your day.